From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 9th day of October 2020. It's USDA Report Day. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about this morning's reports, the crop production and WASD figures with Mike Zuzlow. He's at globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And then a bit later in the program, we'll discuss the dryness across the planet, especially in the primary growing regions for winter wheat, hard red in the Black Sea area, along with Argentina, Brazil, and of course the Plain States here in the United States. And we'll take up harvest weather as well. We'll also check in on the winter wheat market with Ed Usset, grain marketing specialist from University of Minnesota Extension. And that all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn on this USDA October report day finished 8 cents higher at $3.95. The March at 402 and a quarter, up 7.5, and the May a 6.75 higher at 406 and a half. July of next year at 409 and a half, up 6.5, and December of 2021, $3.96.75 a bushel, up 4.25. November beans at 10.65 and a half, up 15.5 cents. January 17.75 higher, 10.66 and 3 quarters, and March soybeans at 10.48 and a quarter, up 25 and a quarter. July 10.45 and a quarter, 26 and three quarters of a cent higher for the afternoon. Bean oil futures 91 cents higher at 34.15. The bean meal up $3.90 at 3.63.10. Wheat futures soft red July at 5.94 and a quarter, three quarters of a cent higher. And the hard red July at 5.54 and three quarters, up 6 cents on the afternoon. Live cattle futures 17 and a half higher in the October at $109.80. 7.5 cents per 100 pounds, December at 112.60, up 2.5 for the day. The feeders up 20 at 138.25, November at 135.52.5, down 92.5 cents. And lean hogs in the October at $78.12.5, up 77.5 cents. Crude oil, 63 cents a barrel lower. Ethanol, up 0.5 cents. Heating oil, 0.1 cents lower. And gasoline on the RBOB at $1.20.5. That finished up 0.3 cents. Mike Zuzlow at globalcomresearch.com now joins us from Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Michael.
Great to be with you. Good afternoon, Todd.
Let's go through some of the numbers USDA released earlier today. Corn now has a production of 14.772 billion bushels on 178.4 bushel the acre yield with a 2.167 carryout and a 360 cash price for the average season. Soybeans have a 290 carryout. They raise the cash price to $9.80 a bushel on a 51.9. That's not changed at all. Average yield for the year. And wheat, a 470 cash price for the day. Which numbers do you want to talk about to begin with?
Well, I think there's a couple highlights. I think we saw the lower and planted and harvested acreage numbers. Corn harvested going down 1 million, beans going down 700,000. That was mostly expected, I think, by the trade because of the derecho and them having to resurvey states other than Iowa. So I think you can put that into the category as priced in, Todd. Same with the beginning stocks going down. And so when you take those two out of the framework of how we got to this carryover level, you have exports, which they kept the corn the same, the beans they raised again, which was very friendly, I think, from a standpoint of, I think the trade was wondering whether the USDA could keep adding to the demand side of the equation, especially the export demand side. And then they also took the ethanol number down in the corn market, in the corn balance sheets. And I think here too, that was expected for the most part, but not really wanted. So when I look at everything in its totality, and I'll talk about the feed and residual separately, but the soy production right now is at 4.27 billion. It is actually lower than 2018's 4.4 billion. Corn production, however, is still at 14.7 billion. And it was 14.3 billion in 2018. So between the Chinese imports for soybeans breaking up to 100 million metric tons, an increase of 1 million tons, and the USDA cutting the U.S. soybean production so dramatically, I think there's more room for smaller inventories, a smaller carryover in the corn, in part because of feed and residual, but also because of demand and because of the production figure. So I like the numbers today, but I still feel as though corn's the better of the two when it comes to storing, and the better of the two when it comes to the cash crop and what you can do on revenue per acre when you look at the yields of each.
Why is that the case again?
Because I think the U.S. production in beans is too low. It's below 2018 already, so I don't think it's going to go down anymore. And I think the demand, the export demand side especially, is way too high. Or if it's going to be, if we're going to see China take 100 million metric tons of soybeans this next marketing year, I will be impressed.
Yeah, so we're just waiting for them to cancel in that case, or just not put anything else on the books?
Yeah, I think a combination, and I think a lot of that goes back to the Brazilian weather, and that's probably the third leg of the stool that I'm looking at in terms of how I'm marketing my crops this year now that I've got these numbers out of the way, and that is, do we alleviate the drought in Brazil? And the weather models are suggesting next week we can start to do that, and we may even be in play for a longer-term weather pattern shift. The last thing I'll follow up on is the feed and residual number. USDA cut that 50 million bushels. You and I have talked a lot about this, how it's more of a catch-all. It's more of a bucket. It's not really feed. It's really residual, and they just throw feed in on top of it. So they cut it by 50 million, and so now it's less than the 1920 marketing year. Yet on today's same report, USDA took the red meat and poultry production up high enough now that we're a billion pounds higher for calendar year 2021 than we were for calendar year 2020. So that feed and residual number just doesn't jive. And I think that's a substantial issue given the placements we've seen for the cattle and the dress weight still being 20 pounds higher the year to date for the beef as well.
Will they have to wait for the grain stocks numbers to adjust it again?
Yeah, I think we're going to have to wait till January for that, you know, the December 30th, early January numbers. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do producers do at this point?
Well, you look at the U.S. stocks, we lost 4.5% in wheat, 13.5% in corn, and 37% in soybeans. So you don't have to run and hedge right away after the Friday report unless you are, you know, not caught up with at least two-thirds done on cash sales of beans and at least a third done on the cash corn sales. I think the world stocks, however, we saw the wheat go up a little bit. So I still see wheat as the leader on the overall market, especially given the fact the outside markets are going to play more of a role as we go into the election, in my opinion, and especially given that drought in the hard red wheat belt of both Russia and here in the United States is, I think, going to take more and more center stage. So if we're going to get higher highs in the soybeans, I think we're going to need wheat to help us do that. And I think Friday's close actually helps solidify that opinion.
Yeah, and in your opinion, that's just good news because wheat is the one you really like to lead.
That's exactly right. And I've told clients this week, you know, Bloomington, Illinois client called me and said, I can get $6 cash for new crop wheat off the combine. And I said, let's start here. If that's our worst price, that's great compared to the last 5 or 6 years. And I think if we don't get much rain in the hard red wheat belts of either Russia or the United States between now and December, and we go into dormancy here with as dry as we are right now, I think wheat's got higher highs to it.
Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Here are a couple of quick ag news stories for the day. Six additional defendants were indicted for their roles in a conspiracy to fix prices and rig bids for broiler chicken products. The indictment also charges one defendant with making false statements and obstruction of justice. A federal grand jury in the U.S. District Court in Denver, Colorado, returned the superseding indictment this week. A Justice Department official says executives who chose collusion over competition will be held to account for schemes that cheat consumers and corrupt our competitive markets. The three-count superseding indictment charges 10 executives and employees at major broiler chicken producers for their participation in the conspiracy from 2012 through 2019. The six additional defendants include William Lovett, former president and CEO of Pilgrim's Pride, Others are also from Pilgrim's Pride, Claxton Poultry Farms, and Purdue Farms. This case is the result of an ongoing federal antitrust investigation into price fixing, bid rigging, and other anti-competitive conduct in the broiler chicken industry. And finally, dead mink on a Wisconsin mink farm have tested positive for SARS-CoV-2 infection. That's the virus that causes COVID-19 in humans. The National Veterinary Services Labs confirmed the infection Thursday, the first among Wisconsin's mink population. Wisconsin is the second state with confirmed SARS-CoV-2 at a mink farm. Utah confirmed its first case in August. There is currently no evidence that animals, including mink, play a significant role in spreading SARS-CoV-2 to humans. However, people infected with the virus can spread it to mink and other animals. People suspected or confirmed to have COVID-19 are encouraged to avoid contact with pets and other animals while they're completing their home isolation to protect the animals from infection. And that's a quick look at the day's agricultural news. You know, earlier in the week, I talked with Ed Usset, grain marketing specialist for University of Minnesota Extension, about the corn and soybean markets. We also talked about wheat and thought that might be worth hearing this afternoon. When I asked Ed if there was anything left to talk about, it's what he wanted to take up.
I've got one eye on the wheat market. You've got some listeners who maybe double crop wheat and soybeans and soft wheat. Son of a gun, soft wheat market is as good as it's been over the last 2 years. It's right on the high end of where it's been over the last 2 years. And son of a gun, Todd, it's about time the wheat market shows some life, because that thing has been, you would think it was suffering from some sort of COVID-19 disease over the last 2 years. But wheat's showing some life.
You've been watching this for a while, since the Kansas City wheat moved to the CME group and to Chicago. It appears that the soft red winter wheat market is really a world market, I think.
Yeah.
And so is it incorporating what's happening in the Plain States, in Russia, the Black Sea area, and the dry conditions? And is that why we're getting such a good, and Argentina for that matter, such a good soft red winter wheat bid?
Yeah, that is a part of it. In fact, that predates the hard red winter wheat contract coming to the CME group, because, you know, I used to trade the Minneapolis hard red spring wheat contract, and you had these three markets. But even 20, 30 years ago, the soft wheat market, the Chicago market, has had greater volume all the time. It's just Chicago. I don't know if it was the fact that the pit was physically located next to the corn market, next to the soybean market, but it attracted greater volume, always did. I am looking at, like, as I look right now, your December Chicago contract is a 60-cent premium to the hard wheat contract, the Kansas City contract. And, you know, there's a part of me as a former wheat buyer of hard wheats, that more valuable, higher protein wheat, I think that's wrong. Kansas City shouldn't be that big a discount. But you know what's gone on over the last 20 years? You've had the development of the Black Sea countries, Russia, Kazakhstan, Ukraine. They together, those three countries, are the biggest exporters in the world. Russia by itself has been the largest wheat exporter over the last few years. Their production has grown, their exports have grown, and guess what kind of wheat they sell? They sell hard wheats. They sell hard red wheats, winter and spring, and that competes with the Kansas City and Minneapolis markets more than the soft wheat market. So I think that's playing into this, that the big players that have emerged over the last 20 years are producing a lot more, and their direct competition is that hard wheat contract, not the soft wheat contract. They are different. These wheats are different. Soft wheats are used for different products than hard wheats. There's a lot of blending that goes on. Todd, I could go on. I could drone on for a couple of hours and make sure everyone is asleep talking about the differences in the wheat. But they have enough to say that they have their own supply and demand. And I think Kansas City and Minneapolis has suffered over the last years as the Black Sea countries have emerged as competitors.
Do they price in Chicago or do they price in France? I don't know. And I don't know how important that marketplace is particularly.
The French market, the Maydef,
yes.
Well, it's active, but it's more of the European variety, this medium, these white wheats produced in Europe. There is, I believe, I don't know if it's active. Chicago did have a Black Sea wheat futures market, but I don't think it took off. Yeah, I don't know how successful that has been. I'm not sure what it trades off of. My guess is they're watching probably, I'm just not sure. They should be watching Kansas City and Minneapolis wheat futures because they are hard red wheats, as are the wheats produced in those regions. But like you say, that Chicago market, it is. I mean, if you were to, you know, poke me in the chest and say, name the world price of wheat, I would probably look at Chicago soft wheat futures because it's the most active market.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, wonderful.
Ed Ussett is a grain marketing specialist at the University of Minnesota. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. I urge you to be safe out there during this harvest season. A couple of things to keep in mind. If you're driving the back roads, look out for the farmers and their equipment. It moves slow. It's easy to come up on it, and I know farmers will be watching out for you. If you're in that equipment, take an afternoon nap because you probably are working really long hours, and that will help keep you safe. 20 minutes. That's all it takes. Shut the machine down and take care of that. And by the way, COVID-19's out there as well. Mask up. You don't want to be down for 3 weeks if you happen to pick this up. It'll fatigue you really, really hard. And you don't want that to happen either. Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions is now here to look at the weather forecast. Let's get right into this, Eric. We'll start with harvest weather over the next week or so in the Midwest.
Yeah, well, thankfully, what's to our south, which is pretty rough right now, is going to stay there. And we're going to end up having a pretty decent another week here of drier weather. Of course, anytime we start to see that drier weather in the fall and then we see the windy conditions that we've had and we will continue to have, this is going to be something that gets me concerned a lot about fires. In fact, I saw a picture last week from Minnesota where a fire went through a field of corn that was still standing and all that was left was a little bit of the stalk in each of the ears, but all the husk was burnt off and it was a pretty eerie picture to look at. So I do have that concern moving forward. So the storm systems that are coming into the Midwest look like they're going to miss us west and north. And we do have a chance of some storms over the weekend, but otherwise it's going to look pretty dry through here. In terms of our temperatures, we're still quite warm. We will have a bit of a cool down that comes through early next week, but we just don't bottom out yet. And so overall, I think our temperature pattern is still quite favorable for anything that was late trying to finish up.
Delta is making its way to the U.S. coast. Any problems there? And where will it dump rainfall?
Yeah, well, it's going to dump a lot of rainfall. So here Friday midday, it's now taking aim right on St. Charles, Louisiana, which is exactly where Hurricane Laura hit. And Laura came through and blew out the radar there, and they haven't even repaired it yet. I saw a pretty troubling video yesterday of all of the blue tarps that are still stretched across roofs down there. And so we know there's been a lot of damage to the infrastructure. Well, another round of strong winds coming in, probably about 100 miles an hour at the coast. But I'm expecting tropical storm force winds to make it clear to southern Arkansas. That's winds up to 74 miles an hour. And then what we're going to have the problem with down there is that the rainfall could be 3 to 10 inches, and it's going to spread into Tennessee, Kentucky, eventually over toward the Appalachian Mountains, and even into parts of the Ohio River Valley. So this is what's actually scavenging and stealing all the moisture from anything that we could have here in Illinois over the weekend. So I was talking to a few farmers down there. They have been going day and night for the last 3 days to try to get everything finished, both cotton, soybean, everything they can. They want to get it out before these flooding rains come in. So it's a mad dash to the finish to try to beat out a powerful hurricane. And by the way, remember, this one's called Delta. So we are deep into the Greek alphabet, and we still have about another month to go on a hurricane season.
Have we got one past Gamma yet?
We have not. So, oh yes, I'm sorry. We had Zeta. Zeta in 2005 was the farthest we've made it into the list. So yep, we've had a Gamma this year, and now we're on to Delta. And from there, we just keep plowing through the Greek alphabet.
Well, hopefully it'll slow down. And while we're doing that, with that many hurricanes and tropical storms during this season, we're also experiencing a La Nina.
Yeah, and this La Nina just keeps getting stronger. So we're already down to central ocean temperatures at -1 degree Celsius. For reference, that would be considered a moderate strength La Nina. The trade winds are stronger than normal, which is typical of La Nina, which actually means that this one's going to have some legs on it. And the newest updates from the European model keep it around through midwinter at least, and possibly beyond. So our concern there would be over what our winter pattern is going to look like. And generally through the Ohio River Valley, expect a very active storm track. So if we can get enough cold air in, which means timing, you know, drops in the polar vortex and timing the North Atlantic just right, we could have a fun winter with some snow. But again, a lot of things have to come together to give Illinois a big snowstorm.
Speaking of timing, producers in South America, Brazil in particular, have been waiting desperately, I think, now for rainfall to come so they could start planting in some of those areas where they have soybeans as a primary crop.
That's right. And like you and I have been talking about, we know that when La Ninas are developing as you go into a Brazilian growing season, it tends to mean prolonged dry season, right? So they don't have the return of moisture quite at the same pace they'd want to really pick up on that late September and then through mid-October planting. We do know they plant a lot of beans from October 10 to November 10, but 80% of the crop gets planted at that time period. But as of right now, it's almost October 10th, right? And so we're out here seeing that maybe by the end of the next week, parts of Mato Grosso could pick up an inch of rain from some of the storms that are going to be there, but they're going to be scattered. They need about 2 inches of rain before they really go after it, because that's what it's going to take to get the seed to bed down right and to also get germination. And if I look out long term, I do not see at this point a full-on return of the monsoon as we work our way through the middle of October and even into the the fourth week. So we're going to continue to see them stay off pace with their planting progress, and that is certainly impacting a lot of things right now. But after that, the shift will probably move away from Brazil, central Brazil, and we're going to start to worry a lot more about southern Brazil and Argentina once the season gets going. There's a much stronger correlation with La Nina and Argentinian drought than there is Brazil. Doesn't mean they can't have one in Brazil, but I look farther south to see the impacts of this. So yes, we got a lot on our plate to be watching while we're in our off season this year.
Hey, thanks so much, and thanks for keeping an eye on it.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Nutrient Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Stay with us. Commodity Week is coming up next.